So how's everybody this evening?
Much better than when I first went.
It's been a hard day. I'm so glad.
I'm glad too.
I have compassion for those of us that have babies.
Very good, thank you. We accept your compassion. It's so funny to come in and there's no cars in the parking lot. And I'm like, seriously, what is going on here? And then we start and there's two people, and then by now, when I came in, I told the woman at the desk, please wait until 8:35 or 8:40 because my students wander in. And somebody got locked out last week, so she was mortified.
To leave the door closed. Yeah.
Thank you. So, no, I just had a laugh. As every now and then I would come out of the tent and just sort of see who was here. And I just had a laugh that it's so typical. I would be the teacher who could care less if people come on time. You know, it's like when I taught music to children, I was the teacher who didn't care if they practiced. And they all played so well. You know, my students played better than anybody else in the conservatory where I taught. And I think there's really something to be said for allowing people to find their own natural rhythm and not requiring conformity to rules that really don't have that much bearing on anyone's being.
I'll write that down.
That is such a beautiful thing to say. I gotta tell my mom.
Well, it's recorded, so one of these weeks I'll be able to finally get all these talks cleaned up and on the blog.
Don't edit that one out.
So welcome, everybody. Those who had a good day and those who had a rough day. I woke up feeling kind of sick today. And kind of felt sick all day. So, but I feel better now, too. Nothing like chanting. Such a great practice.
Great elixir.
Ah, yes. So tonight, sort of filling in the Patanjali gaps. So where we left off in the summer was at 43, which is the niyama. Patanjali is giving a little bit more information about the niyama of tapas, which again we did talk about in the summer, but just to remind you, when we talk about tapas, doing tapasya, it's the sense of burning, it's the sense of pushing against one's edges. It's the sense of, that about says it. How does Chip, as intense discipline burns up impurities, the body and its senses become supremely purified. As intense discipline burns up impurities, the body and its senses become supremely refined. It's a great sutra, and the whole idea of tapas, which when we perform tapas, it's called tapasya. It's a very sublime notion, and one that, of course, in our fear-based culture, consciousness formed in that culture, we then tend to turn this into intense discipline, which would be something that would be really hard. And I'm not saying there's no place for that in this life and on the yogic path. Of course there is. Intense discipline can create a very profound and powerful container in which to perform whatever action we're performing. But we have to be so careful, because when that intense discipline is tainted by the ego's attachment to attaining, appearing, what would be some aspiring?
Achieving.
Achieving, thank you. then it's no longer tapasya. It's an ego-tainted journey to pride and delusion and false sense of self. And the tapasya that's required to come to class when you arrive without feeling any ajata or guilt because you haven't arrived at the specific open door time. To do that without ajita or anxiety is also a form of tapasya. Right? Because we're so addicted to beating ourselves up, and we will take any opportunity we possibly can in order to do that. So if the stated schedule of the class is 7:45 to 8, theoretically 8, although I can't bear stopping at 8, so I've been going till 8:15. When we swing back to 7:30, we'll go back to 7:30 to 8. When that's the stated schedule and people are still wandering in, you know, people who used to be here by 7:45, but now that we're starting at 7:45, those people have a way of coming in later. And that's just kind of the way, that's the way it works. We're a human. We're creatures of habit. The body has a wisdom that it's that first half hour of class. And it's supposed to be 7:30 to 8, right? And it only got changed because of external realities, otherwise known as dealing with the aroma of the hot yoga room. But the body still remembers that first half hour is when I come to class. And the body sometimes, for some of us, can't get here before 8. And that's fine. That's life. That's reality. But to use that, oh my God, I should be there, as a way to beat yourself up or feel bad or just whatever, that's to go against the natural rhythm of your being, right? To apply internal pressure around something that requires no such pressure is to do harm to yourself. And then you're violating the very first yama, right? You're violating ahimsa. So you want to be very careful how you think about the niyamas, and especially one like tapas. Because it's not about twisting oneself into a knot to attain a specific kind of a discipline so that you'll be so absolutely contained, nothing will ever leak out of you. You know, it's not like that. We have to be able to flow. We're like water. You know, we can't be cement sticks. Oh my God, do you know about the website Stickman? Does anybody know about it? Somebody sent it to me. This is this crazy thing. I think that's what it is. Stickman. Try Googling Stickman, and I'm sure you'll get it. And it's this crazy thing where you draw a stick, man, woman, whatever, and then you kind of say go, and then there's this whole, what is it called? Not audit. What is it called? Cartoons? What is that? Automation. Is that what it's called? No. What's it called? Animation. It's this whole animated thing with your stick figure. It's so cool. So we want to be like that, flowing and moving. We don't want to be cement stick figures. Anyway, that's not the sutra for tonight. So we have the last two sutras where Patanjali is commenting on the niyamas. R 44, this is Swadaya. Self-study deepens communion with one's personal deity, Swadaya. Self-study deepens communion with one's personal deity. And the last one is Pranidhana. Through orientation toward the ideal of pure awareness, one can achieve integration. Through orientation towards the ideal of pure awareness, one can achieve integration. So again, these three niyamas make up Kriya Yoga. That's why I wanted to chant that one line several times. Tapas Swadaya Ishvarapani Danani Kriya Yoga. That's where he's stating it. So these three together are the yoga of action, the path of action. If we practice tapas, which is really focused awareness. It's really all about focused awareness. If we practice swadaya, which this is a lovely, lovely translation, self-study deepens communion with one's personal deity. We'll get to that in a moment. And then pranidhana, through orientation toward the ideal of pure awareness, one can achieve integration. You know, it's very, very interesting. You know, I've said this so many times, how I never used to like this text because it was a little too dry and Buddhist for my bhakta sensibilities. This is a killer commentary on the Yoga Sutra. This is an amazing, this is like over the top commentary on the, and the translation, it's sublime. This is a great book. If you are enjoying Patanjali, I cannot recommend this enough. I can't even read the other version. I mean, I have so many versions of Yoga Sutra. I can't even look at any of them anymore. Every time I take one down to try to bring in another perspective, I'm just like, ew, I have a version, Vesha, serious Vesha. He says a very brilliant thing. Well, first of all, I didn't know this. The one of the literal translations of pranidhana is alignment. So, if he is making a correct reading of Patanjali, and I think he is, he takes a very, very radical stance about this sutra. Because if you read any of the other commentaries, they talk about this sutra, and any time Ishvara Pranidhana is mentioned in the Yoga Sutra, because Ishvara is translated as the Lord and deity, it becomes all this deity, Lord.
Surrender to his
exactly. Yeah.
Surrender.
Yeah, surrender. Surrender, surrender. It becomes very Bhakti Yoga-esque, which is not Kriya Yoga. Bhakti Yoga is not Kriya Yoga. Bhakti Yoga is Bhakti Yoga. And to project that interpretation on these verses just because of the word Ishvara, I'm beginning to realize is not correct. And if in fact pranidhana literally translates as alignment, integration, and if we begin to think of Ishvara really as the self, the supreme self, then forget any of the quasi-religious kinds of interpretations we might put on a word like Ishvara, and just get that one's personal deity is the inner self. You know, forget about anything else. It's the inner self. If you happen to resonate with an image of the divine that is resonant with gazillions of other people on the planet, fine. Resonate with that image of the divine. But don't project it onto the deeper meaning of this text, which is rather clean and clear of so-called religious connotation. Self-study deepens communion with one's personal deity. And if you think of one's personal deity, I mean really, I, for instance, have had a very strong and profound resonance with the goddess Kali for a zillion years. But what does Kali mean to me? But this very powerful stream of authenticity and truth. It's not some goddess with skeletons around her neck and hair streaming and that skirt with those awful arms and her tongue sticking out. That's not the Kali that I resonate with. It's that fierce stream of awareness that moves through me with a clarifying light that obliterates anything that would try to trick me into harming myself. If I have that understanding, then fine, let it be my personal deity. Yeah? See where I'm going with this? So self-study, swadaya, deepens communion with one's personal deity. What is that saying? It's saying, sure, again, swadaya is often understood as the studying of text, the chanting of text. Someone trying to get in? I don't think so. Oh, yeah, okay. And certainly we study texts as a way to open into the deeper wisdom that lives inside of us. And we're interested in opening into that deeper wisdom that lives inside of us as a way of knowing ourselves better, as a way of having way more awareness around everything that we say and do. Otherwise, what's the point? I meet people all the time who have some wisdom, but they don't have a whole lot of attainment, and they act not so nicely. They act not so consciously. They act not so kindly to themselves and to others. So who cares about a little wisdom if you're not using that wisdom as a mirror into your own heart, your own self, and peering deeply into that mirror and looking at your action in this life. Swadaya is the choice and the tapasya to keep looking into oneself with as much honesty and generosity and kindness as we can bring. But we want to, as they say, walk the talk. You know, we don't want to quote the yamas and the niyamas, but what we're doing is everything but, right? So self-study deepens communion with one's personal deity. We want to look into ourselves and keep finding that alignment with what I'll simply call the truth of our being. However you experience that, it's an alignment with authenticity. It's an alignment with the core of your own being. You know, I get very nervous when we bring too much deity worship into the project, because there's such a tendency to project out. Right? We're already so addicted to giving our power away. And any kind of hierarchical religious system is a setup for doing that. If we're not feeling it inside of ourselves, we want to ask ourselves, why not? Why am I not feeling my divine possibility? What am I doing to obliterate that? Why am I trying to obliterate that? What is it in me that would want to obliterate my core luminosity, my core divinity? Why would I want to project that out when I have it in? If I know it within, I don't need to project it out. It's just going to be wherever I look. How many times have you had the experience when you're in alignment, life is sublime? And when you're out of alignment, not so good. It's the same life, same people, same stupid situations, right? Same to-do list. We're in alignment, everything is divine. We're out of alignment. I can't get through this. Yeah. I've said this, I mean, people who've been with me for a long time have heard this story. I think the most extreme experience I ever had of this was my first trip to India, and it was really hot, and early on, and just like a day or two into that visit in the ashram, there was this huge celebration going on, and part of it was this very elaborate puja where all the women had to put on silk saris and sort of this very long procession and walking on all this marble, and then finally get to this, I forget what it was, but it must have been the statue, and you know, we're waving the lights, and I'd been on the line for so, and I had just arrived, I hadn't adjusted yet to the heat and the silk sari, I was so hot, I was sweating, and the marble, my feet were killing me. You know, you've been to Ganeshpuri, and Oh, man, it was just horrible. And by the time we got, it was so hot, and so I was so miserable, and everybody's on the line, and I've got my stupid tray and the lights, and I'm afraid the lights are going to go out, and I just want to kill myself. And I come in, and there's the statue, you know, and I'm waving the lights, and I'm just like, when is this going to be over? And, oh, and finally it was over, and I just got back to my dorm, and I collapsed. You know, it was just torture. So, and then, I don't know, 6 weeks later, 8 weeks later, I'm now in the groove. And there's another puja. Same thing, same sari, same feet, same long line, same marble I had to walk on, same procession to the wherever, same
heavy
lights,
tray.
The whole thing, the arati tray. And I was just like, and I can still remember, you know, waving the lights in front of whatever, whoever, whatever it was, probably Nityananda, probably. And I was, you know, just bliss. And I found myself just spontaneously, every wave of the lights, you know, making a prayer for this person. And I don't even believe in prayer. You know, I was praying this person and that person and blessings to this. And complete and utter ecstasy. Just because that time I was in alignment. That was the only difference. So it's all about our internal alignment. And when that is aligned, what seemed miserable is not. You know, it's all how we perceive it. So we want to practice that svadaya. And we want to get so adept in the practice of svadaya that when we sense ourselves moving out of alignment, we just shift right back in. You know? That's the real practice of Hatha Yoga. The shifting back into the so-called divine alignment. And the last one, again commenting on Ishvara Pranidhana, through orientation toward the ideal of pure awareness. I love that. Through orientation toward the ideal of pure awareness, one can achieve integration, which is what I was just talking about with svadaya. It's really what it's all about. That's what yoga is all about, right? The yoking of consciousness into alignment with the so-called Supreme Self through orientation toward the ideal of pure awareness, the ideal of pure awareness, otherwise known as God, right? Through orientation toward the ideal of pure awareness, one can achieve integration. And it's nice to think that we only have to orient ourselves towards the ideal in order to achieve integration. We don't even have to work that hard. It's just a shift. Make a decision, yes, let me orient awareness, let me orient consciousness, let me orient my sense of self towards the ideal of pure awareness. I don't even have to know what pure awareness is. Let me just be open to the possibility that such a thing exists. And if I just move myself in that direction, integration happens. It's magic. It's the mystery. Integration happens, strangely enough, when we think happy thoughts, right? And I'm using that term somewhat facetiously. But when we think of pure awareness, when we think of our supreme identity, when we think of truth, integration happens. These are very powerful words. They have a lot of Shakti in them. There, you know, there are a handful of people in my life who I find myself always having very kind of deep, profound conversation with. And I'm not talking about when I'm doing sessions. I mean, just in the course of life, a conversation with a friend, whatever, a cup of tea, phone call. And we'll shift into some kind of conversation about consciousness and being and alignment and truth. And I become so happy. It's the favorite conversation. It's good company. So these three, tapa, swadaya, ishvara, pranidhana. In the sutra it becomes pranidhanani, but I guess the noun is pranidhana. This is Kriya Yoga. This is the path of action. And it's so beautiful and it's so profound. You know, when I was younger, until about 6 months ago, no more, I guess, I've been getting kind of zen, weirdly zen in my old age. The old bhakta seems to be dissolving into this zen creature. And I think I have a greater appreciation for Kriya Yoga than I ever had before. Kriya Yoga is zen. It's mindfulness. It's awareness. It's so when we're chanting, if we're practicing these three, when we're sitting, when we're talking, when we're drinking tea, when we're driving, when we're relating to other people, it's like bringing the fullness of being into every cell and meeting every situation in life, not to mention meeting oneself with the intensity of that clarity and that focus and that presence. That's what it's all about. That's what the Yoga Sutra is about. That's what the path of yoga is about. That's what yoking is about, right? We're yoking to the supreme alignment. So let that sink in, and I'll just tell you one small little tidbit. Oh, actually, no, I brought some few little treasures in to entertain you with. But this is nice. So, in the beginning of our Patanjali adventure, I was all excited about Nishala Devi's translation. But I've become a devotee of Chip Hartshoff, what can I say? But I was looking in it tonight just to see, was there something? And she does do a really, really great thing with the Gayatri Mantra, which is, and I did borrow that from her tonight, which is why we chanted Gayatri. So this is really nice. And she does, I will say this, she has a beautiful translation of the Gayatri Mantra. So her translation goes like this: embracing earth, heaven, and beyond, right? Bhur, Bhuvah, Svaha. The sacred source is revealed, Tat Savitur Varenya, evoking the resplendent flame, Bhargo Devasya Dimahi, the all-pervading light venerates us all. Dio Yona Prachodayat. I can't say it. Dio Yona Prachodayat. It's funny, I can sing them, but I can't say them. My tongue twists. So again, embracing earth, heaven, and beyond, the sacred source is revealed, evoking the resplendent flame. The all-pervading light venerates us all. And she says a lovely thing. She says, so, the sacred source is revealed. That's Swadaya. Right? When we practice Swadaya, the sacred source is revealed, evoking the resplendent flame. That's Tapas. The all-pervading light venerates us all. That's Ishvara Pranidhana. It's very, very nice. So I give her salutations, because it's a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful weaving of these two wisdom systems. So put that in your pot and cook it. Here's Lala, Laleshwari. The steel called mind, room, space. Sorry, the steed called mind, room, space. The steed called mind, room, space. Covering 100,000 miles in the blink of an eye, the steed called Mind roams space, covering 100,000 miles in the blink of an eye. He who does not know how to tether it is apt to be battered to death by the in-breath and the out-breath. Yeah, that's why we practice yoga. The steed called Mind roams space, covering 100,000 miles in the blink of an eye. He who does not know how to tether it is apt to be battered to death by the in-breath and the out-breath. Yeah. Really want to follow Patanjali's teachings and learn how to yoke that mind, right? Yoke that roaming consciousness.
What book is that, though?
This is just a Georg Feuerstein anthology of collected teachings of yoga. It's actually, I wouldn't even recommend it. I don't think it's that great, but there's a few good things in it. Yeah, there's a few lovelies in it. This is nice too. This is Vivekananda Swami. If there is any road to heaven, it is through hell. Through hell to heaven is always the way. When the soul is wrestled with circumstances and has met death, this is Tapasya. When the soul has wrestled with circumstance and has met death 1,000 times, death on the way, but nothing daunted, has struggled forward again and again and yet again, then the soul comes out as a giant and laughs at the ideal he has been struggling for, because he finds how much greater is he than the ideal. Yeah? Vivekananda. It's a little dated, you know. It's old. It's very Victorian language. But it's wonderful. Is there any road to heaven? It is through hell. Through hell to heaven is always the way. It's very William Blakeyan. When the soul has wrestled with circumstances and has met death, 1,000 times death on the way, but nothing daunted, has struggled forward again and again and yet again, then the soul comes out as a giant and laughs at the ideal he has been struggling for, because he finds how much greater is he than the ideal. Right? And finally, Aurobindo on the ego. I think this will be very familiar to everyone. What stands in the way, of course, is always the vital ego, with its ignorance and the pride of its ignorance and the physical consciousness. Wait, let me say this again, I'm sorry. What stands in the way, of course, is always the vital ego, with its ignorance and the pride of its ignorance, and the physical consciousness with its inertia, which resents and resists any call to change, and its indolence, which does not like to take the trouble. It finds it more comfortable to go on its own way, repeating always the same old movements, and at best, expecting everything to be done for it in some way or other. Yeah? Too much, I'm putting you all to sleep. No? I'll give it to you one more time. This is Aurobindo again, talking about ego. What stands in the way, of course, is always the vital ego with its ignorance and the pride of its ignorance, and the physical consciousness with its inertia, which resents and resists any call to change, and its indolence, which does not like to take the trouble. It finds it more comfortable to go on its own way, repeating always the same old movement. Right? The definition of insanity. Right? And at best, expecting everything to be done for it in some way or at some time. And at best, thinking that doing the same thing over and over is going to produce a different result, which of course it never does. We learn this over and over. Yeah. I learn it over and over. So, there's some teachings for you to chew on this evening.